What would you do if you're the coach for your son's Little League team in Seattle and arrive for a Saturday game at your local city park's baseball field to find a man camped out in the dugout? Would you offer to buy him pizza and help move his tent and belongings off the field so the children can play? If he refuses to leave, do you call the police, your elected officials, or the people at Seattle Parks and Recreation from whom you reserve the rented field? Is there a more compassionate and appropriate team of outreach workers that you could call? What can we do about those people who don't seem to want any help? What is causing such an increase in homelessness in Seattle, King County, and what are possible solutions? People ask me about ways to help a friend, colleague, or family member who is experiencing homelessness and accessing needed health care, especially when they have recently lost their job, their health insurance, or they've cycled in and out of jail for outstanding warrants, or on an endless waiting list for substance use treatment. How can I help them get a case manager? They need surgery, but the surgeon won't do the procedure unless they have a place to stay afterward, and medical respite won't take them. So what are their options? I know someone who has terminal cancer and is homeless. What exists in our community in terms of palliative and hospice care for homeless people? Then there are questions that people experiencing or having experienced homelessness ask me. Why do they make it so hard to talk to a counselor? Why do I have to be living out on the streets a lot longer to be able to qualify for housing? Why did they cut me off Medicaid and food stamps because my disability payment increased just a little bit, but I'm still homeless? How come the police or community vigilantes can come take our tents and stuff when that's considered stealing for anyone else? Why do people not get that harm reduction saves lives, including the lives of their children and grandchildren, their brothers and sisters? People ask me these questions because I have worked with people experiencing homelessness for close to 40 years, with 30 of those years working and living in Seattle. I have done this work as a nurse, a researcher, a program and policy designer, and as someone with a lived experience of homelessness and severe depression as a young adult. I recognize my privileges as a white, educated woman from a middle-class, primarily intact family with access eventually to competent mental health treatment. My experience of homelessness was within these privileges, was relatively brief, 6 months, and was one time only. Simultaneously, I know that my lived experience of homelessness as a young adult informs my research, writing, advocacy, and care provision as a nurse. My experience is an essential element of my moral compass. It helps me be aware when people use othering, stigmatizing, socially exclusionary, and derogatory language and actions toward people experiencing homelessness. Those people include me. Those people could be you, your neighbors, coworkers, friends, or family members. Those people are all of us. Seattle prides itself on being a progressive, forward-thinking community. Perhaps this is a place mythology, but the reputation is part of what drew me to Seattle from the much older and more conservative East Coast city of Baltimore. Seattle has the enviable position of being one of the best places in the United States for upward socioeconomic mobility of children in many of its high-opportunity neighborhoods. At the same time, Seattle has had one of our nation's highest rates of homelessness since the founding of the settler colonial town in the early 1850s. It continues to have one of the highest rates of homelessness, as does King County, in which Seattle is located. In November 2015, King County Executive Dale Constantine and Seattle Mayor Ed Murray declared a state of emergency for homelessness in Seattle, King County. Since then, homelessness has continued to grow despite the work of people on multiple renditions of committees to end homelessness. In the January 2020 Housing and Urban Development's point-in-time count of homelessness in Seattle, King County, there were 11,751 people in King County experiencing homelessness. 8,166 people were living homeless in Seattle on the night of the count. City, county, and federal officials curtailed the annual point-in-time count in January of 2021 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The newly formed King County Regional Homelessness Authority altered the January 2022 point-in-time count. Their leaders claimed that its affiliate community partners did not have the capacity to participate in the annual count due to the continuing epidemic and staffing shortages. They also claimed that the previous methodology severely undercounted homelessness, especially in suburban and rural areas, areas they hoped would step up with more funding support for their efforts. In a separate study using multiple data collection points, the Regional Homelessness Authority reported that there were a total of 40,800 homeless people during the 12-month time period of 2022. Seattle has long had many transient people, and this continues today, from the seasonal people working in the fishing industry to construction workers who come from many parts of our country and live here temporarily. I've led King County's point-in-time count in previous years in the University District in Seattle and have noted many construction workers living in their vehicles. Are they homeless? The official answer was yes. Even though the vast majority of homeless people in Seattle and King County are originally from this region, or at least from Washington State, before they experienced homelessness, some people move here from other U.S. locations in the hopes of finding jobs. They might have a job offer that then falls through when they arrive, and they end up precariously housed, if not outright homeless. They do not anticipate the high cost of housing in our city, and in most cases, they've moved away from their support systems. The reintegration of people exiting our nation's prolific prisons and the link between laws in certain states limiting access to housing, food assistance, jobs, and even voting rights for ex-felons is stark. Advocates for reforms to our carceral system call this double punishment. The risk of homelessness and reoffending is highest during the month after release from prison. Supportive housing and employment services help prevent this. A recent study found that former prison inmates are 10 times more likely to become homeless than the general population. Persons of color and women are at highest risk. Beth Macy asks in her book, Dopesick, about the fate of Ronnie, a black man in prison for the third time in Virginia for drug-related crimes. What if Ronnie's reentry had been managed not by an overburdened and apathetic system, but instead by workers from Brian Stevenson's Equal Justice Initiative, which sends clients to felon-friendly cities like Seattle? People with felony convictions, even for nonviolent drug charges and for Washington State or elsewhere, can end up homeless in Seattle. In Seattle, former prison inmates like Ronnie do face less barriers than if they stayed in states like Virginia or South Carolina. Although this is fodder for right-wing reactionaries' claims that progressive and, in their views, overly permissive Seattle attracts ex-felons, I would rather live in a compassionate city and state that gives people a chance of reintegrating into the community and not ending up homeless. Native American and Native Alaskan people, indigenous people, are the most overrepresented subpopulation of people experiencing homelessness in Seattle, followed by black people, highlighting the effects of historical trauma from settler colonialism, slavery, and racism. Seattle has current fallout from our history of racial housing covenants, redlining, and racist single-family zoning laws. Of note, many rural and suburban areas of King County are more conservative than Seattle, and conflicts over approaches to regional homelessness echo those around our nation. People living unsheltered in vehicles and tent encampments increased visibly during the pandemic, creating humanitarian, public health, policing, and political controversies. From City Hall Park encampments in downtown Seattle, the Capitol Hill organized protest encampments of Capitol Hill after the police killing of George Floyd, to encampments in Green Lake Park and adjacent to Bitter Lake Elementary School, conflicts have deepened. These conflicts have arisen between homeless advocates, people experiencing homelessness, business leaders, government officials, homeowners, and renters on land adjacent to the encampments. Homelessness was the top issue for Seattle voters in the November 2021 election, with moderate and business-backed candidate Bruce Harrell winning the Seattle mayoral race over the more progressive candidate Lorena Gonzalez. In addition, the worsening of visible homelessness locally factored into the contentious race for the next Seattle City Attorney General, with Law and Order Republican candidate Ann Davidson winning decisively over the progressive former public defender and police abolitionist Nicole Thomas Kennedy. Kennedy has called for an end to misdemeanor prosecutions, many called crimes of survival, which fall disproportionately on homeless people and persons of color. Visible homelessness in our city and county is at a level not seen since the Great Depression, when Seattle had our country's largest and longest-lasting tent city, Hooverville, south of Pioneer Square. With the ending of the nationwide state and local moratoriums on foreclosures and residential evictions, confusion over the Emergency Rental Assistance Program and housing vouchers, and Medicaid continuity during the pandemic, most people working on the front lines of health and social services in Seattle, King County, and elsewhere expect to see another surge in homelessness. This is especially problematic in the Seattle area with its rapidly escalating cost of living. Early in the COVID-19 pandemic, when we were asked to shelter at home and congregate living spaces such as emergency shelters were known to flame the spread of the virus, public health officials locally and nationally moved to limit shelter capacity. They placed moratoriums on both evictions from housing and homeless encampment clearances. The city and county worked quickly to acquire hotels and motels, even Harborview Hall, the former nurse's residence at Harborview Medical Center, to safely house homeless people and others who could not safely isolate and recover from the infection and disease. Public Health, Seattle, and King County, and their Healthcare for the Homeless program, along with Harborview Medical Center, provided nursing and public health support staff at these isolation and quarantine facilities. They implemented a harm reduction approach to engage with clients experiencing homelessness. Several of my students who are nurses have worked there throughout the pandemic, so I've learned about the challenges and innovations of such programs from the perspective of nurses. As our country contends with the new reality of post-pandemic era individual and community life, there is clear evidence of deepening economic and racial inequities, as well as breakdowns in our already frayed health and social care safety nets. Any walk or drive through our urban areas from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles reveals a steep rise in visible poverty, suffering, and homelessness, especially for persons of color. Deaths, disabilities, and economic fallout from COVID-19 have disproportionately fallen on the elderly, medically vulnerable, disabled, frontline workers, and Black, Indigenous, and persons of color. The COVID-19 pandemic accelerated an already steep rise nationally in mortality rates for people experiencing homelessness. Recent studies show a 77% rise nationally in mortality for homeless people over the 5 years from 2016 to 2022. Causes of death include exposure to extreme heat and cold, accelerated by weather extremes from climate change, and from the so-called diseases of despair. overdose deaths and suicides, as well as more recently from COVID-19. King County recorded a record-breaking 310 deaths of people experiencing homelessness in 2022, an increase of 65% from 2021, with fentanyl, overdoses, and homicides as causes. Here in Seattle, which already had one of our nation's highest rates of homelessness and income disparities before the pandemic, tents and other temporary living structures made of cast-off materials line the hillsides along I-5, appear on sidewalks and in green spaces such as ravines and city parks. Cars, RVs, and trucks, with screened-off and fogged-up windows and windshields, the temporary homes of vehicle residents dot the landscape. A house next door to my own, in a mixed-income neighborhood near the university where I work, has changed from an informal refuge for homeless squatters to a flipped, single-family home that recently sold for $1.3 million to a young couple working in the local tech industry. An unofficial count of unsheltered people experiencing homelessness found a more than 50% increase in people living in encampments between the summer of 2019 versus the summer of 2020. How do we reconcile the fact that Seattle is both a progressive, hopeful city and a place in which homelessness is such a large, growing, and deeply entrenched problem? I asked a version of this question in my book, Skid Road, On the Frontier of Health and Homelessness in an American City, which traces the history of homelessness and safety net healthcare in Seattle and King County. People wonder if our high rate of homelessness is because of our progressive politics. Some people liken it to overly permissive parenting at a civic level, similar to what happened in San Francisco. More conservative voices fold this in with the conclusion that homelessness in Seattle is a drug problem or a mental health problem, and even recommend locking up homeless people at the nearby McNeil High Security Prison alongside serial rapists. Along the political spectrum, I have people ask me why we don't apply a Marxist analysis of homelessness and recognize that capitalism requires an underclass. So we have to get rid of capitalism to solve homelessness. I realize how contentious and politically polarizing many issues, including homelessness, have become in our country. Homelessness is a wicked problem, meaning it's complex, multifaceted, and causes a high degree of conflict because no one can agree on the causes, much less its solutions. We need ways to provide more constructive civil discourse to find paths forward. We need to cultivate a deeper, more nuanced understanding of homelessness. We need to elevate the voices and stories of people with the lived experience of homelessness, including from people who have overcome homelessness. Today, I feel homeless. I woke up this morning and thought, "It's a homeless sort of day," said a young man standing in the rain with a small group of his friends outside a homeless youth shelter, a stone's throw from the university campus where I teach. I was at the shelter recently as a faculty preceptor with a group of our University of Washington medical and dental students for what we call Teeth and Toes Clinic for the provision of basic foot and dental care. One of the young man's friends asked, "How do you define homelessness?" He replied, "I don't know. I like to think of myself as a traveler, but today I'm homeless." This conversation stayed with me all morning as we cared for the young people who had come just for the clinic services. It continues to haunt me. Reflecting on the fact that I have lived in Seattle for 30 years, working as a nurse practitioner, researcher, and advocate for people experiencing homelessness, I wondered, what progress have we made, have I made, in terms of solving homelessness? How can we make it so that no one has to wake up to a homeless sort of day?